Well, good afternoon and welcome to Glenbrook's latest podcast. And that's this week. I am very lucky to be joined by John Blaine, who is the chairman of the Everton Football Club Shareholders Association. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, mate. Not bad. Thank you very much for giving up your time today on what is...
My pleasure.
Well, a lot of the country are watching Boris Johnson tell us about the how we're all going to unwind out of COVID-19 lockdown, but I thought I would much prefer to talk about all things Everton and regeneration of the Liverpool Docklands that they're planning. So John, just before we start, I just wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously not all our listeners are avid Evertonians like myself, so they might not know the significance of the Everton Shareholding Association.
Yes, sure. Happy to do so. The association, the clue's in the name, really, I suppose. It represents the shareholders. You may know, or perhaps you don't know, there's around, crikey, what was it at the last count? Maybe up to 1,500 shareholders in Everton Football Club. And one of them owns around 75% of the stock, which is a guy that I guess your audience may have heard of, a guy called Farhad Moshiri.
Yeah.
Bits and bobs of shares are then held by people like Bill Kenwright, the chairman, who has on around whatever it is these days, 5% or something. And that leaves a rump of maybe 15 to 20% who have always been referred to as the minority shareholders, many hundreds of which have bought a share, maybe just the one share for emotional reasons. And the larger of that rump of shareholders maybe have 50, 100 shares, 200 shares, whatever it might be. And it's those people that I represent, have good relationships with the football club, and the association is believed to be the oldest football shareholders association in the world, having been founded, what would it be now, 82 years ago.
Yeah, okay. Right, interesting. And you, but you also have a business background yourself, don't you, John? You're...
As a person, yeah. I mean, I'm a long-term... user of information technology. When I say long term, we're talking about 40 years in the industry.
Yeah.
But in the latter 20 years or so, my career was all around business process improvement, organizational change, and basically extracting value from the use of technology.
Right.
And to a large extent, I exercised that in the outsourcing world. And certainly did a number of very large and high-profile deals, both in the public and the private sector. To me, large deals are anything above 100 million contract value.
Right.
And I've done deals in the range from 100 million up to about a billion pounds.
Wow. Well, that's, I mean, property terms, obviously 100 million plus is extremely large. Anyway, I got in touch with you because... I would like to talk about what Everton are planning in terms of their stadium relocation. You know, arguably an emotive subject. Just to start off, should Everton be leaving Goodison Park?
Like most Evertonians, and I know you're a Blue as well, Chris, yeah. It's going to be a sad day in about 3 years' time when we all rock up to Goodison Park and realise this is the last time we'll see the first team playing here in a competitive game. But the stadium, for all its iconic value and some of the wonderful architecture that's in there from days gone by, is a bit tired these days. And it's certainly not really set for the 21st century. Its sight lines aren't great. There's lots of stands with pillars in the way. There's inadequate numbers of corporate hospitality places. So the short answer to your question is, yeah, it probably does need, it being the football club, does need to move. But as the only football club in the city who have built stadiums, and the one on Bramley Moor will be our third new stadium in the city. It's anyone who's seen the architecture drawings and the like will see that we're continuing to try and make a material difference and build a beautiful stadium on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey.
Now, I as you are and I am, I might be biased, but it does look, the images, and I'll put some out when we put the podcast out, But they do look fantastic, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, we've been really fortunate, and football clubs in the round at the moment with Project Restart and maybe the Premier League, and their shareholders are talking about it as we talk. But often leadership of football clubs is maligned and all about league table, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But one of the best decisions I think our football club made on the non-playing side in recent years was the appointment of Dan Meese, who's a North American architect, to be the architect of the new stadium. And he fundamentally gets it. I mean, of course, it's famously said that once Everton's touched you, nothing is ever the same again. And certainly that's where Dan's at. He's got Everton tattoos these days. And he from his very first meeting, talked about this stadium being career-defining for him. And he's an award-winning architect already, but I think this stadium really could be the jewel in his crown. It is stunning to look at.
Yeah.
And the way we're going to be sympathetic to the heritage of the site and all those things is really quite laudable.
Yeah, it is. It is. And then, you know, having worked in the property industry myself for, 25 years or so, one thing I do know is there can be quite a difference between an architect's design and vision and its ability to be delivered. And do you think there are any, you know, we've heard lots about the design, the plans and the timescale, but we've not heard much about the funding of it. What's your take on that? How's it going to be paid?
Yeah, in this world, funding is always the challenge, isn't it? I think you're quite right to say you've heard about the plans. I mean, the fan consultation, the two rounds of consultation that the club did with both fans and with the citizens of the Liverpool City region have proven to be award-winning consultation processes. So I think they've done as best they can there. Perhaps the only thing that is transparently missing for the Joe public like ourselves is where's the money coming from?
Yeah.
The club have said, of course, that they're going to borrow around £350 million to build the stadium, that the remainder of the forecasted build cost, including site prep, which is going to take around £100 million to prep the site, is thought to be coming from shareholders. And I think it's not too provocative to say it might focus in on a single shareholder. And I certainly know when I met Farhad Moshiri, was it last year, the last time I saw him, he certainly felt, or I got the impression, he would dip £100 million worth into helping make the stadium happen.
Yeah.
And then there's naming rights and other commercial incomes associated with the stadium that are supposed to make up the gap. Yeah. We've got Mitsubishi and JP Morgan working on the funding side of it. So let's hope and expect that that's under control. They just haven't told us who or what it is yet.
So, and the fact that they seem to have distanced themselves away from the council's offer of a lease wrapper, that they've sort of they expect the funding to be to come from elsewhere rather than having to use the public sort of pump priming lease or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the early days, the arrangement that they, I suppose we'd call it like a heads of terms, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
That the club had with the city council, which would obviously have generated a decent amount of income per annum for the council to use on services. I think politically that was quite challenging, and it seems quite clear that once the club got what it's been described to me as great interest in being a lender, then that made it less and less likely that that public sector funding from the central fund, which Liverpool would take advantage of to then sub down to the football club, seems less likely to happen.
Yeah, okay.
Which is a shame for the city because it seemed like a sweetheart deal to me.
Yeah.
And we talked about it on Everton Business Matters, which, as you know, I do a podcast on Everton Business Matters, and we were positive to it because it was good for the city, but we even said, I think, on one of our episodes, it might not be the best deal the football club could get in strict financial terms at that time, but it was good for the city. And on balance, we thought it was good news. But that's gone away a little bit, but who knows if C19, if that brings a tightening of the market, whether that will come back again.
Yeah. So one of the things I thought we could talk about is I understand what the benefits are going to be for Everton, I hope, is that they will, you know, cement themselves as a sort of top five, top four football team and all the rest of it, and then we'll power on for glory after that. But what's your views on the sort of short-term benefits for the city? We own real estate in Bootle and Liverpool. As a property investor, what could we look forward to in the short term in terms of benefits?
You told me just before we started about you've got quite a lot of square footage in the Bootle area, which clearly isn't that far away. I mean, anyone who knows the area will know that there's been a long-term, a development called Liverpool Waters, which fundamentally starts almost at the city centre and works its way north.
Yeah.
If you visualise that you've got a waterfront and the city centre is sort of at one end of it, and at the other end is Bramley Moor Dock, where Everton proposed to build their stadium, then fundamentally the stadium would bookend the Liverpool Waters development. And one would anticipate that would stimulate an acceleration in the development of that land, really.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to do this, I suppose, if you don't know the area, but if you in your mind's eye think, when you're looking ahead, on your left is the Mersey and directly in front of you is Bramley Moor Dock. On your right is some of the most deprived parts of this country. You look at the 10 Streets area, you're sort of between the river and Scotland Road and all that sort of stuff. And regenerating North Liverpool is pretty fundamental to what the City Council needs to do. And that regeneration will probably stimulate, £650 million worth of spend or something. There's a load of societal value, which is something that was all new to me when I first heard it. But you use the question short term. If we talk short term being, the build period of the stadium, that's going to create, 12,000 jobs or something. And then maybe 3,000 jobs permanently once the build is finished. And it's claimed it will bring, an overall boost to the economy of some £1 billion and then a load of business rates, which obviously will help the council. Probably business rates and council tax. So it would appear, to me anyway, and a bit like yourself, maybe I'm biased, that it's a no-brainer for the City Council and the Liverpool City Region to want this stadium to get built.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's undeniable that the Eastlands project in Manchester,
good example, friend. Yeah, good example. Yeah,
that really was a catalyst for that part of East Manchester, it's very difficult to compare the two locations, but Eastlands it does not enjoy the profile that the Bramley Moor Dock will. That's for sure. Just it's. I mean, I think iconic is an overused word, isn't it? It will look out of this world, I think, on the Mersey.
Well, it will, and as the particularly cruise liner type stuff, as the ships come into the city, it's almost the first thing of real, stature that they see will be the stadium. And the build of the stadium is going to generate 250, 300 million worth of supply chain for local businesses and obviously all the wages that go with that. So that medium-term thing, or short to medium, of the construction of the stadium will bring a great stimulus to the city and the city region.
Yeah.
And obviously when we come out of this C19 thing, all that becomes even more important than perhaps it did a year ago.
Yeah. Absolutely. What's your understanding of where the timeline is on all this?
The timeline, it's funny because before you asked me to come on this, I obviously with my shareholders chairman's hat on, I'm consistently engaging with the club and asking how it's going. The club submitted a planning application just before Christmas with the expectation that the city council would reach a decision in the summer of this year. We then, as a football club, submitted it, because we're also, again, for your listeners, we're not just building a new stadium on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey, we're leaving a legacy behind at Goodison Park. So we submitted outline plans last month. It's May now, isn't it? Yeah. Last month in April. And both those, that's for the legacy, and both those are expected to come to fruition with a decision this summer. Spoke to some people at the council. They're doing their planning process virtually now. So they still think they're going to make a decision within the time frame they originally said, not despite what's going on with C19. And then it will be the Secretary of State's going to have to rubber stamp it, because there are heritage concerns by the World Heritage Organization and Historic England. But the club have worked with those stakeholders throughout the process. And we rather hope it will be a desk exercise for the Secretary of State, who will give final approval. Therefore, done and dusted, following wind, ever a blue optimist, spade in the ground. At this rate, perhaps before next season starts.
So what we're saying, a three-year build period? 3 years?
Yeah, three years. So 3 years out, season 23-24, we'll be in this brand spanking new beautiful thing. And I'll say it again, on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey.
I think these things, that it's more than just the direct economic benefits. It's a sort of pride for the city as well, and a sort of self-confidence, which sometimes is a criticism level that certainly the public sector within Liverpool, that there's a bit of lack of self-confidence about promoting the city and promoting the benefits of the city. I must admit, I've always found that anyway, that it's a sort of, you know, you sort of sat doing a presentation on the Liverpool City region, and you can sort of point to that and say, look what we built here on here, and this iconic building. I would you agree?
Yes, I'm proud of the city I was born in, and I am disappointed to hear that people lack confidence in the city. I mean, clearly there's going to be a load of people who are very confident, and you've always got people along the spectrum.
Yeah.
But since the stadium's started, I mean, I was speaking to one of the PR guys months ago now, but he said already the council had seen an increase in new planning applications in and around the area. Land values, he said, were starting to increase, whether that's still happening. So whilst the citizens may not be as positive and confident about the ability of the city as perhaps others like me or you might be.
Yeah.
I think those who can see opportunity to make money do appear to be confident, and obviously first in, best dressed, I suppose.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting on a decent land bank not far away, then I think you'll do okay, my friend.
Maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see. If not for just the odd builder needing to store some vans or something, I don't know. But
it is a pretty run-down area, if anyone's ever been out there. And I think our city can often, when it really matters, proves what it's really about. Yeah. And I think it would be a great lift for the city to prove it could build what undoubtedly is going to be one of the most, and you use the phrase, and it is overused, but perhaps becomes one of the most iconic stadiums in the world.
Yeah, do you see? Yeah, I 100% agree. What do you see are the sort of major hurdles between now and the first team playing in there, the season 23-24 season?
I think you said earlier you've listened to some of the Everton business matters, and I'm fond of saying we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that could be the real concern, that something that hasn't been thought through, or a bit like C-19, just couldn't necessarily have been predicted in the impact that it could have, could come in the way. In the short order, though, I think it would be, is our ownership, and we're talking about Mr. Mashiri, I guess, fundamentally, can he stay committed in a period of uncertainty to something that would require a decent chunk of his own personal wealth, and require him and his, you know, the board, Denise Barrett-Baxendale and Mr. Ken Wright and Sasha Rysantsev, to convince lenders that the risk is worth taking at a price that we can afford to pay. And I think they're the short-term challenges. I think, and I'm going to look really silly if this turns out to be wrong, a year ago, we'd have been concerned about whether we're going to get planning approval, and that looks like something the club have done a really good job on.
Yeah.
And now the issue is, can we get the funding in place?
Yeah. Yeah, funding. It's always funding, isn't it? It's always funding.
But for every cloud, there's a silver lining. And whilst the black hat version of me says that the more positive thought is, when we come out of C-19, we'll want to get the economy moving. This government claims to be committed to the north, and so on. And infrastructure projects are clearly ways to spend your way out of what could be quite a deep recession if we're not careful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely. Infrastructure spend in particular, yeah, you're 100% right there. Well, John, that's brilliant, and thank you very much for taking some time to speak to us. That's really interesting insight into that, and that's been great, and I hope you enjoyed listening to this, and if you did, please hit the subscribe button. Thanks very much.